Make believe is not pretend. We might be ill, but we're on the mend. It never starts, it never ends. Welcome to Craig and Friends. Welcome to Craig and Friends. Welcome to Craig and Friends.
Hello.
Hello, hello, how are you?
I'm great. Sorry I'm late.
Oh, don't worry about it. That's fine. I ended up having some kind of mild technical problem, so it all worked out perfectly.
Oh, gorgeous. It's all worked out in the end.
Yeah.
Do you end up using the video?
Yeah, I use for promo posts, and I'm going to start putting stuff up on YouTube as well.
In which case, I'll take off this warm, sensible dressing gown. Maybe I'll leave it on a little bit.
Yeah.
I was like, it's freezing.
Do you happen to have earbuds or anything?
Oh, yes. I can put on a headphone.
Okay, cool.
Over the wig.
Oh, no, that's okay. You don't have to if it's going to compromise the wig. It's okay.
Oh, no, if it makes it... Actually, do you know what? Put it on under the wig.
Yeah. There we go. Perfect
technique.
That way
it'll actually fit. Oh, okay, maybe I'm kind of committed to trying this now.
I appreciate that. Yeah.
Is this a look?
A unique look for my show, which I appreciate.
I might. Do you know what? We might go for a natural, real hair moment.
Okay, perfect.
See how we feel.
Well, I'm certainly doing a very real hair. My lockdown mullet is getting ever more present.
Oh, me too. Well, I mean, obviously, I have a slightly more Afro-textured hair, but it's
sure.
Still, it's mullet-esque for me. Mullet yeah, so adjacent.
Are you cutting your own hair or just letting, what are you doing for your hair?
Do you know what? I've concluded, just as you asked me that question, I decided that I'm going to cut my hair today and bleach it.
Oh, amazing.
So I've had bleach ready to go, and I'm just like, just do it. You only live once. Do you know what I mean?
No, that's what I was thinking about lately, because I have the clippers with all the different attachments. So I'm thinking, well, if I do the longest attachment...
Then it's safe.
Yeah, exactly. Because basically, it's getting too much. Like, I mean, this is under control, and this is not under control. There's this thing happening. So anyway, yeah.
That's me every day of my life. Like, I don't know how this piece of hair is so long right now, but we move. This is our existence.
Yes, exactly. And then we'll look back at the photos and go, oh, look at that. That, you know, that'll be the interesting part of this whole experience. Well, not for
it'll
you. I mean,
style.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you've had quite a lot of different interesting parts of this whole experience, because you were to and fro from the bubble, outside the bubble, before you knew there was a bubble, all of that.
There was a lot. But, you know, we're still here, and we're still going, and we're moving through the global panettone, as I've been calling it, just to avoid the word. But we are moving through it, and I just think, like, as much as that was a really difficult time period, I feel like we're getting to the end of it, and we're going to look back on it, and it's going to feel like a history moment. Like, people are going to learn about what we've just lived through in classes, which is just bizarre to think about.
You know, it really is remarkable. And I agree with you that we are in the end stages of this whole thing. I can feel a certain lift. I imagine you can as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's been the most bizarre experience, sort of having all of this drag stuff happening all at the same time. But it's I don't want to call it a blessing, because obviously it's been a particularly awful time for a lot of people, but in a way it's been very helpful to me to have perspective.
Sure. And I think it's good to have that approach when dealing with Michelle Visage, because I know that it can be upsetting. Also, the other thing about historical perspective is that you and your compatriots helped to lift people's spirits during a really difficult time. You know, it's like the thing everyone looks forward to every week, in particular when it started. It was a little darker of a time.
Yeah. And that's honestly been the most amazing thing to come out of it, I think, for all of us. It's just that feeling that, like, no matter how we feel looking back, or no matter what's happening at the moment, like, we know that show is coming on that Drag Race UK is going to bring a little bit of joy and glitz and glamour and entertainment and give you everything that you need at this time. Especially, you know, you said it, like it has been a bit of a dark time, and to have that sort of ridiculously pink room appear on screen once a week has got to lift people's spirits to some extent.
Yeah, I imagine also being able to return back to the show was a bit of a godsend, because I mean, I was excited the other day when I went to the bakery. It was like, oh, this is great, we're back to normal life. So to actually go back to shooting a TV show, I bet was like, oh, this feels good.
Yeah, it was the return was a moment. But it was difficult, I can't lie, because obviously there are aspects of things that maybe, you know, everyone watching the show, you see a week pass and you think, they had 7 months and she turns up in a terrible ice cream cone costume. There's been a lot of things going on in people's lives that obviously are not necessarily addressed on the show or maybe addressed publicly that sort of may have stopped people, whether that's financial or, as Veronica touched on in the special episode, she was so down for weeks.
Yeah.
And it was a really, really tough time. So like, mad apologies to the people who wanted more rhinestones on that. But unfortunately, we're also all living through a really difficult time financially, emotionally, physically, D, all of the above. Like,
yeah.
It was tough. So going back in and walking back in was, for the 5 minutes and before I found out that Veronica wasn't coming back, was a real sigh of relief and a real sort of like moment to breathe again.
But that was a real kick in the gut for you too, because Veronica was, and you were quite close, right?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
My God. It's awful. Honestly. Yeah. I had no idea at all. I had no suspicion. I sort of clocked while we were sat there. I sort of counted up and I was like, oh, there's only one person left. I entered at that point. Oh, my brain just went, they're doing it alphabetically. That makes total sense. And when you watch it back, they actually did.
Okay.
But now I know it's for a reason. So I was like, oh, Veronica will be there in a second. And we were all sort of laughing and joking because she does take quite a while to get ready. She's usually the last one.
So you're just thinking, like, oh, classic Veronica. Here we go.
Yeah, of course she's late. And then you're expecting Veronica to walk in next, and there's RuPaul in a Ginny Lemon wig. Unexpected on many levels.
Well, you mentioned history, and you're quite into history, right? I mean, obviously noted that from the first episode with the Alan Turing outfit.
Yes, I try to be. It's not necessarily my strongest subject, but I think it's important to me to have an awareness of things that have happened. It's important to me to not lose my voice. And it's important to me to have an awareness of things that have happened in the past, because I think if you don't know what's come before, then you don't know where to take things afterwards. It's just incredibly important to me. And Alan Turing, as much as that was a moment for a plethora of reasons, both good and bad, I'm glad that it got some more attention and more focus on someone that deserves it, to be honest. I kind of had the feeling that most people would know who he is when I did it, but it was a choice that was made to sort of be like, well, there are like very young people who watch the show who are into it, who might not be aware. They might not have learned about Alan Turing in history or researched or watched The Imitation Game or anything like that. So I was like, this is my choice and I'm going to do it in a fun, colorful way.
Yeah.
Turns out quite a lot of people did not know who he was. Mm-hmm. And that kind of became a bit of a moment.
Which is great, because you're doing a service in addition to, and then the people who do know are excited. So, and it's a great suit.
Absolutely. And I got invited to Bletchley Park as well by the official Bletchley Park Twitter account. So what more could I want? I'm going to go and roam the halls dressed as not quite Alan Turing, but an interpretation of, and just have a lovely time learning.
I want to get back into your history, or go into your history rather. So when did you first have, very early over here, so you have to give me a moment if I...
What time is that?
It's like 7:30, 7:45, something like that. Which is fine. Sorry. I just... No, it's fine. I just... Not fully caffeinated. That's the only thing. So, but we're getting there. Yes, cheers.
Same.
So, where did you grow up?
I grew up in Essex, which is... where Cheryl Hole is from,
sure.
I think, quite iconically.
The classic Essex girl, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Cheryl is the archetypal Essex girl. I grew up in Essex, which was honestly a lovely place to sort of like grow up. We were very close to London, so we have our tube system sort of came through to Essex, or I guess subway. Is that what the American version of the tube is?
Yes, yeah, it is subway, yeah.
Yeah,
but
so we
some of us know the tube. Some of us know the tube. I actually went on the tube only one time on my trip there because I get lost so often. But I was chaperoned onto the tube, and it was quite impressive.
The tube makes it easier to get around.
Quite substantially so. I was shocked at how easy it was, and also that the thing comes every 5 minutes, every 10 minutes or something.
Is it not in America?
No.
Do you have, like...
It's not nowhere near as reliable and efficient as your system.
Wow. If I go down, so I never plan a journey like over here. You don't have to think about it. So I'm just like, oh, I'm late, run to the tube station. And then I get there and I'm like, 3 minutes? I never have to wait 3 minutes. That's so long. Like usually it's like one every 1 or 2 minutes. Like,
oh, okay.
Yeah. When it gets later in the night, you're like, oh, five minute wait. That's, you know, I guess it's 10 p.m. So I'll let it slide.
But,
like,
inside I'm outraged. That kind of thing. Yeah,
yeah, exactly that.
Did you know Cheryl before the show or anything?
Yes, not well. But Cheryl is quite a sort of like London scene icon. And we we came from different sides of London. So Cheryl was very much sort of more of an East London baby. Mm-hmm. And grew up under the tutelage of the iconic Me, the drag queen. And then I came from sort of the South London Soho scene and was raised by the slightly more gaudy, brash, like traditional British queens, who are the ones who sort of like get up there and have a particular set of songs and set of jokes.
Oh, sure.
Shall we say?
Yeah. 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 Reliable classics.
Yeah, absolutely. It's very much, if you imagine what you think a British drag queen at a seaside town would be, that's everyone that I ever worked with and everyone that I sort of was raised by in my drag. So we came at it from very different angles, but sort of knew of each other because I think once you get past a certain threshold of bookings and things in the London scene, then everyone sort of is like, oh yeah, you're that one who does this gig and this gig and this gig.
Right. And you end up being at certain functions together and so on. Yeah. What was the first time that you had an inkling that you wanted to do drag?
So I sort of write my own shows and take them to the Edinburgh Fringe Festival most years. And when I was there, I saw a show that was called Saucy Jack and the Space Vixens, which no one knows, but they should, because it's basically Rocky Horror set in space.
I'm sold. I'm in. I want this. Yeah.
Right. And there was one drag character in it, and it was nothing to do with the drag aspect of it, even though I had watched RuPaul's Drag Race for years. It was just the character. And I looked at that character and I was like, I want to play that part. So I just will. Like, I'm not going to wait for the audition for another. I'm just going to get the rights, find a venue, play the part. Basically cast myself in a show because no one else would, and found a venue, which was the Two Brewers in Clapham, because it's set in a bar, so I wanted to do it in a bar.
Sure.
Thought I was being really like edgy, subversive and creative in that way. And then we were rehearsing it one day and the manager just came up to me and said, oh, I'm doing a drag competition, you should enter. And I was like, oh, I could never do it on my own. Started a girl group with two other people from the cast. We did this competition and won. And they were like, that means you're through to the heat final. What? We thought it was just, okay, fine. this means you're now through to the semi-final. Wait, it's a national, it's across the whole of the, it's 250 people entered this competition. Okay, fine. We made it through to the final of it. The girl group is called the Vixens after Saucy Jack and the Space Vixens.
Sure.
And in the final that year, the Vixens came second and relative unknown something Wong came third. So just saying that final, which was won by Danny Beard, who you might know.
Oh, yeah. I hosted the show with Victoria's Secret that I went to see, that I saw Joe at and Ginny at when I was there for DragCon.
Yeah, Danny, absolute icon, fully deserved to win that year. But the Vixens, myself and something sort of all worked in the same places. We sort of became friends from that point onwards and then ended up doing a quiz, hosting a quiz every week together in Clapham at the Two Brewers. And yeah, no, we just sort of regularly end up in the same gigs in the same places and always inevitably end up singing Little Mix songs together.
It's a nice way to close out the night. Now, yeah. When did you start having an interest in writing?
Oh, that probably stems from kind of feeling like I wasn't being put in shows, because I studied at the University of Nottingham. And we've got the largest student-run theatre in England there. So it's entirely run by students, the whole building, the maintenance, everything, programming. And that was a huge part of my time there. But I got to direct once in about 5 years and mm-hmm. appeared in one show the whole time I was there. And that doesn't sound like a lot, but in a year, that student theatre puts on anywhere upwards of 20 shows. Every week there's a new show.
Wow. Yeah.
So the opportunity should have been there for a lot of people to get involved. And at the time I didn't want to push the buttons of certain people by suggesting why the same sorts of people got cast all the time.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
Yeah, we were already dealing with the fact that there weren't enough roles for sort of female actors and things like that, let alone sort of POC roles and things like that. It was basically just white men in every single play. Mm-hmm. So I just decided off the back of that I would sort of run the drama club, where we did, like, it was an offshoot of the theater, but I was like, this is a safe space where people who are never going to get the parts because it's so cliquey and isolated,
yeah,
can do their own shows. And from there, created this sort of devised piece and took that to the Fringe and then started writing everything. And now we've ended up basically just writing parody musicals of pop culture moments.
The whole through line of all of this stuff is very DIY. You know, you look at the landscape and you say, well, okay, that's not going to get me where I want to go, so I'm just going to do it myself. And it's clearly working out pretty well.
Well, I just would fully recommend that to anyone, because I think it's important in a way, if people aren't going to give you the opportunities. I think it's a bit of a fallacy that people think that opportunities are deserved or earned, when I think a lot of the time it's about creating it yourself. Mm-hmm. And sort of like, you will have to put the legwork in to sort of like make what you want to happen. And it's entirely possible. And maybe, you know, it might not work out in the end. Maybe you'll be a singer-songwriter and write lots of pop songs and Lady Gaga won't record one of them. But the journey is just important as the destination.
Yeah, and self-created careers are usually the most satisfying, it seems like.
Absolutely. Yeah.
In terms of performers that you admire that led you into acting, who were some of the ones that sort of rang your bells when you were young?
I was a bit of a strange one, to be honest, because I have, my sister always tells me stories about when I was younger. And one of the ones that she always says, I have no recollection because I was 2 or 3, but she always tells me about how she bought a cassette tape of a RuPaul song, actually, which I think was, it was Supermodel or something. I think it was You Better Work? No.
Yep. That's Supermodel. Yeah.
Yeah. And apparently she put it on and I'd absolutely light up and sort of like dance around, and that was my favorite. But growing up, the biggest like the two things had a massive impact on me, and they were the Eurovision Song Contest.
Yeah.
And the television show Big Brother.
Okay, that's an interesting combo. What a sandwich that is.
Yeah, but when you sort of end up as a live singing reality TV contestant, it kind of makes sense in the end.
Yeah, it does.
But yeah, they were a massive, massive influence on me. I think because Big Brother started in the UK when I was about 9, so I shouldn't have been watching it because it was very naughty and it was on Channel 4 and it was like, there was always like nudity and like rude words and things.
Yeah.
So it was probably like me feeling some type of way about seeing a nude man on the television screen.
Oh, I'm glad I'm sitting down because that's very shocking.
Absolutely. And also just very, very simply, I distinctly remember one of the contestants was called Mel, and she was basically the same color as me and had the same hair as me. So I was like, she's also mixed race and also does this and also that kind of thing. So I think there was like, just like a lot of young me identifying with a lot of things that was happening. There was a contestant called Nicola who was sort of like shaved head, openly a lesbian, like all of that kind of thing. And there were just so many aspects of all these people that age 9, I'd never seen anything like it.
Yeah.
In my very sort of suburban, sensible Essex neighborhood, it just sort of like opened my eyes and I was obsessed with it.
Yeah. I've only really seen the Celebrity Big Brother, the UK edition, but I'm kind of obsessed with that. I had to like stop myself from watching it because it's a big commitment of time.
Oh, yeah. Every day. Every day there's an episode.
And you could go fully down the rabbit hole with the live stream cams.
Yes, that was always a moment because they used to stream them live on the television as well. So it wasn't just online.
Oh my God.
After like 1 a.m. instead of going off air. Do you remember when TV channels used to go off air?
I do.
Yeah. They would just live stream it until like 6 in the morning when the news started. It was so strange. Really
I could
weird.
Totally see getting hooked into that one night and then leading to many nights because then you'd be watching it and why turn it off? And then suddenly it's dawn. There's a certain specific feeling when you do that, when you're just sort of watching stuff. Then the sun comes up and you never quite get used to that.
Oh, no, but I kind of love that because that always reminds me of like binge watching my favorite shows.
Sure.
Like, but I'm just like, I just need to know, like, even though I've watched it 17 times, I just need to get to the bit where Buffy finds out that Dawn isn't one of the potentials in the final season of Buffy. Like, yeah. And then it keeps going. I just need to get to the bit where Spike gets the amulet. Like, you keep going.
Oh, there's always another bargain that you're making with yourself. It's fine. You know, I'm just going to watch another half of this episode. But, I like that intro sequence with that theme song that, or, you know, whatever they did, that fun thing. Yeah. What are some of your binge watch shows? Buffy obviously is one, but what are some of the others?
Oh, I honestly describe myself as a glamorous geek for a reason because it's always that kind of always the same sort of shows. It's usually sci-fi or strong women with supernatural powers. So it's Buffy. We love Charmed. Absolutely, like, cannot without binge watching a bit of Charmed. I'm such a massive Doctor Who fan as well.
It's, do you have a favorite Doctor Who?
I do. I think it's Matt Smith, the 11th, because people always go for David Tennant. And I think just because I'm trying to be like, break the mold, I've just decided it's Matt Smith because everyone says it's David Tennant. So I'm like, not me. Different, edgy.
I make my own choices, thank you.
Yeah, exactly. But also because his companions were Amy and Rory, and just, again, strong, powerful woman, like Karen Gillan playing Amy Pond with her absolutely like firecracker red hair, being as sassy as anything. I was like, you're the best. I'm into this.
Yeah. Saucy Jack and the Space Vixens. I need to be able to see something on this. Is there a video available or...
That I think there's a couple of like clips of it on their YouTube channel where you can see you can actually see Faye from Steps, who's just released the band Steps have just released a song with Michelle Visage actually. But Faye from Steps plays the lead role in this musical, and it's It's honestly so ridiculous. It's about this sort of like wheeler dealer, sort of illegal smuggling sort of guy called Saucy Jack, who runs a dive bar in space off just off the planet Frottage 3. and there's some naughty things going down, and the intergalactic police force, the Space Vixens, who are three iconic women, sort of show up. And it turns out that Jack has a history with one of the Space Vixens, and this like romantic plot sort of like, but honestly, I'm not convinced that it makes a lick of sense, but I just love it so much because it's so camp. And it, to me, it encapsulates everything that Rocky Horror did, in the sense that you're like, this is a plot, right? These things make sense together. Convincing yourself that it definitely makes perfect sense.
Of course, the finest science fiction.
Yeah, exactly. And it's perfect. It's got all of the double entendres and things that you could possibly want from it. And also hair dryers that are laser guns.
Oh, that's perfect. Yeah, because in Rocky Horror, where it's like the ornament off the front of a car that Richard O'Brien points at Tim Curry to zap him. Household items really work well in this medium.
They do. And definitely save money when you're trying to do a costume and props budget. So right. We love that.
There's a couple late 70s sci-fi themed porns that I'm going to have to find the names of. Because I know that I can see the poster image. I can't remember the name, but I'll have to send them to you because they're quite lurid and they have that great sci-fi on a budget look with lots of silver foil over things and, you know, people, the terrible dialogue. It a lot of fun.
That honestly sounds like the most gorgeous time. In fact, that's probably my new binge watching.
Terrific, terrific.
Pastime.
Yeah, I love those. What are some favorite movies of yours?
Oh, I'm bad at movies because my way of operating is like just with a constant ebb of anxiety. So I feel like I've got to do a lot of things at all times. So sure. Like committing to a full length movie, unless I've also got three other things to do at the same time, always is quite daunting. Having said that, did I watch three of the Avengers movies in one day about 2 days ago? Yes. But was I also filming some videos, rhinestoning a costume, and also writing a new song? Absolutely, all at the same time. Favorite movies? I think I have to just be... as they did call me basic on the show, I will give a basic answer. I think, honestly, Mean Girls is quite high up there for me.
Well, it's a pretty good one. It's kind of inarguable. Yeah.
Yeah, because there's just... I really don't think anyone can have a single problem with that film. You might look at it and think, objectively, this is for teenage girls, but that it's just too enjoyable.
Well, I think it also works as a comment on society in general. So there's a lot of layers to it, and it can work in... or for any audience. I was going to say in any context, but for any audience.
Yeah. And it's smart as well. Do you know, I have to share this with you. It honestly blew my mind. So I discovered the other day, there's a whole plot through Mean Girls that Regina fell out with Janice because she was a lesbian. She thought Janice was a lesbian. And Janice was like, no, I'm not a lesbian. There's one scene where they're at the prom where Kevin comes up to Janice and dances with her and is like, oh yeah, like where are your family from? Like, what's your cultural heritage? And she says, I'm Lebanese. It's taken me this long. It's honestly taken me a decade of my life to put that association together and be like, oh, Regina didn't understand that she was Lebanese. And that is the entire basis of the film is a misunderstanding about Janice Ian's like cultural heritage and sexual preference.
And
it
the other
honestly changed the game for me completely.
And the other great thing that's laid in there for older viewers or, you know, music geeks is that Janice Ian, of course, the famous lesbian singer-songwriter who did the song at 17, I was like, oh my God, they named her Janice Ian. That's incredible.
I didn't know that. See, we're just all learning.
Isn't that great? Yeah, and I love stuff that has many like sort of Easter eggs of knowledge in it, that you find out something a little bit later, or a joke is buried in there because there's so much content in it that you're like, oh, I just found this thing out. I just realized this connection with the Lebanese.
It's honestly just made me so happy because I truly believe that Tina Fey is like some sort of like genius. So like all of that, sort of her performance in it, and then her taking it and rewriting it to become a musical, which I haven't seen yet because it isn't here.
And have you seen any of the songs online or anything?
Oh, absolutely, 100%.
Yeah.
Sounds gorgeous. I do love a pop musical. Again, me showing my basic traits once again.
Look, if you look behind me on the wall, there's the Hedwig, I don't know, pop musical. That's up to anyone's decision, but like it's Hedwig and Tommy. So I'm a huge fan of musicals as well.
Oh, me too. I honestly, I have a good obsession with a pop musical. Less so a jukebox musical, but definitely a pop musical.
I feel exactly the same way. I want to like the jukebox musicals so much, especially like, so let's look at Rocket Man. Beautiful movie, right? Plays with the fabric of actual facts quite a bit, but I liked it a lot. The jukebox thing, I don't know. I kind of would prefer if it was just a newly written score, right?
Absolutely.
Because I feel like with a jukebox musical, we all have our own associations with each number, and then if it doesn't feel like it fits in our minds to the narrative, it's jarring.
Yeah, but having said that, I've had this thing in the back of my mind for about 10 years where I've like wanted to write a jukebox musical to a particular album, because it sort of already has the storytelling in it. And I've got like a Word document somewhere on one of my Google Drives that's just got all of my bullet points that I wrote out like 6 years ago, being like, these are the characters, this is the journey, maybe I'll write it one day.
The writing process is really interesting. Do you recommend just keeping notes of everything? Anyone who wants to pursue a career in a similar vein?
I think it's really difficult, because sometimes the best thing for me in terms of getting something done is necessity. Like if I know that I've been given dates for a show and they want another sort of parody or something like that, I'll choose the topic, and then I know that it has to be written on time. And in fact, I did one Christmas pantomime, which was a parody of Mary Poppins, where the cast received the script, I think 3 days before the first performance.
That's the recommended time, right?
Yeah. I mean, I was just like, I'm really busy. Like, I just didn't have time. But I think keeping notes of things is a really, really good way to do it. That always works for me with, like, particularly songwriting and things like that. I'll just scribble down, like, lyrics. And actually on Drag Race, I'd taken with me just, like, a book where I'd... because throughout the day, I'm just sort of walking around and I'll just try and write my own verse to, like, whatever song it is, just to amuse myself. And if I'm like, oh, that's really good, that rhymes with that and that line's great, jot it down in a notepad, just in case there are any challenges that are relevant to that. So keeping notes of like ideas, I think particularly works for songwriting and things. And maybe also if you have like a character or like a scene or a plot point or something in mind, just get that down. And if it's not relevant to anything that you do for the next year, that's wonderful. But at some point you're going to be like, what was that thing that I thought? That would be perfect right now.
Right. Because sometimes people can get hung up with the blank page. But I think if you just have a bunch of stuff that's there, you can sort of trawl through it and find something and work from there.
Yeah, absolutely. And you also find that you can build around things that you've done previously. Because I found the British pantomime, I write a pantomime every year for one of the LGBTQ venues in Clapham. And there are format points that you sort of have to hit. Like a British pantomime will always have a, it's behind you, like interactive moment with the audience, and certain songs. And there's a ghost gag where someone has to come on and kidnap the cast one by one until one person's left. And
yeah,
certain format points. And actually following that kind of structure means that I know where I'm going. I know that this scene has to get me to this point. So actually, that could be another idea for people writing things from scratch, is to sort of have the framework in place first, rather than what I've tried to do a lot of the times, which just ends up being a Word document that's just a stream of consciousness monologue that then just there's no trajectory for it.
Sure. Yeah, that's right. And even taking a pre-existing form that's not for a certain assignment, but, you know, take a movie that you like is mediocre and figure out how to redo it or something, you know, then you can write your own thing.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Let's get away from the creative stuff and just talk about sex. What's your dating life like?
Oh, very complicated. And also, probably one of the reasons that that 7 month break was quite difficult for me between Drag Race. We are in the middle of a global panettone, so it's pretty non existent at the moment.
Well,
but,
sure. Same here.
Thank you.
Over a year abstinent, not by choice. So,
yeah just against my will. Yeah, grateful to whoever it was who invented certain apps for the community, because at least there's a vague communication happening occasionally. Although even that's a bit difficult at the moment, because there's a lot of, I thought you would have been really great in the comedy challenge this week. And I'm like, I'm honestly here for the exchange of nude images and not for conversations about what RuPaul was like in real life.
Yeah. Cultural criticism of any kind, actually not interested in this venue.
Yeah, absolutely.
But outside of that, though, when was the first time that you had a situation?
A situation? Do you mean a romantic entanglement?
Exactly that.
With
a person.
When was
With a person.
With a human person. That would have been like while I was at school. I honestly don't know what age I was. I'm gonna plump for a legal 16. That's
sure.
what I'm gonna say. I think so. But it was with a female human person.
Oh, okay. I've heard of those. I've heard they're great. No, I'm quite a fan of them myself. Yeah.
But that gradually shifted and was no longer the case for me. I have not participated in such activities for many a year.
What was the progression like during that changeover period, if you will?
Oh, I think I definitely just had like a swathe of many years where I was just like, sexual activity is enjoyable, and that in itself is a wonderful pastime to engage in, no matter how anyone sort of self-defines and things like that. And then eventually I sort of learned of my own mental separation between sort of like my romantic interest, which I think the romantic interest and the sexual interest can be separate things
sure.
to an extent. And then eventually we came to the conclusion that we definitely defined ourselves as a gay man. But isn't it fun to explore those things and sort of figure it out for yourself?
It is. Yeah. And I sort of came to the realization that I like more than just one type of situation. It's a bit later in life. So, I'm always interested in when someone arrives at the prescription that works for them.
Yeah. But then I think these things are like can change and can become different. I think much like gender, sexuality can be a fluid experience as well. So
yeah.
I don't think just because someone has been one thing means that they always will be. But
sure.
also, the most important part is your life is your own. So you make good choices for you. And as long as you're not sort of hurting or harming anyone, then that's great.
Now, before the Panasonic, or I do like panettone because it is a delightful dish. It makes you smile.
Delicious. Yeah.
Exactly. Do you have a favorite flavor?
Do you know, I don't. I always find it very confusing because I always think it's going to be like cake and then it's just air.
Right. And there's never quite enough of the, like, for instance, the chocolate in the last one I got. There's like, you're always trying to dig for more and you end up eating more. So then it's like just this, a lot of bread in the end of, at the end of the day.
Right. But very light, airy bread.
That's delicious. True. Yeah. It's not really that much of a burden. It's just a light, delicious little treat. What do you have any favorite sweets?
All of them. Like, I honestly have the sweetest tooth and it's the worst thing ever in the world for me. Like, I will absolutely demolish. You probably don't have them in America, but that we have a biscuit called a custard cream and I will demolish an entire packet of custard creams and not notice that it's happened. Like, yeah. Especially dipping it into a cup of tea, just like casually, yeah. All gone. I honestly... Oh, every sweet, every treat. Yeah, I'm the worst.
I'm going to have to try custard creams the next time I'm over there because I fell in love with a few things, minstrels in particular. Those
delicious.
Yeah, those are the best. There's not really an equivalent over here. So,
really?
Yeah, but you can buy them on Amazon now, I see, which is good. Well, it's not good. I mean, it's good or bad depending on how you look at it. Yeah.
I think it's good. I think it's great.
You're right. I appreciate that. Thank you for the support. I needed that on this Monday. In terms of relationships, you mentioned the difference between romantic and sexual and everything. Did you have a relationship at any time before the Panettone that was a combination of the two?
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
As you may have seen on the sort of special episode that they aired, there was definitely a boyfriend cutting my hair.
Oh, okay. So forgive me. That's the one episode I didn't see.
Oh, it's equal parts uplifting and also just quite difficult. There's a lot of things in there that I loved it because I got to watch the people that were in the workroom with me sort of living their lives during that time. Because we sort of didn't, obviously we didn't see each other. We're all from different parts of the country.
Yeah.
And to see Cherry Valentine legitimately working on the front line, putting on their nurse's uniform and going out there to work in our National Health Service during a pandemic was really tough and really inspiring. And she's actually someone that I think is absolutely amazing. And also just all of our NHS workers in general,
yeah,
are just wonderful, wonderful people, because this must have been the absolute worst time to be working in a National Health Service.
Absolutely.
At all.
Yeah, I can't imagine the terror. And by the way, so I'm sorry, I didn't know about the boyfriend thing, and if that was something that ended during this time, I didn't mean to offend you, so my apologies.
No, no, not at all. My one skill is if I'm uncomfortable, I don't worry about it. I won't be, basically.
Okay, good. Well, because also I like to be up on all the data, and I just somehow missed that episode. You know, I think it was a day when I was like, I know we're in a pandemic. I don't need to see this, that kind of thing.
I don't know if they put it. I think it's on WoW Presents. I'm not sure.
No, I think it is. And I think I was like, oh, I'll watch that later. You know, because that kind of thing where you're like, I don't want to know about what's going on right now. I'm aware.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of thing. Yeah. So
it was tough.
Yeah, right. And so sometimes you just want to like hide under the covers and watch like sleazy early 80s movies, which is what, anything with a hooker or a stripper, I'm like, I'm in, this is great.
Oh my god, gorgeous. That actually does sound wonderful. But yeah, no, I would actually recommend watching it. Sorry, I'm just trying to unhook this bra that I have on.
Do your thing, and because I cut as well, so if you need to adjust something or whatever, you can take a break if you want.
Oh, I love that. I'm just enjoying our chat, to be honest.
Oh, that's lovely. Fun. I am as well. Yeah. I am as well. I don't, when I get tongue tied, I freak out. I mean, it's that crazy thing where you think in your mind it's this larger than life, flopping on the floor, but it's really, you know.
Yeah, it's just absolutely fine. I do that like all the time when I have to like record things, or if I'm doing something, I get really frustrated with myself when I like stumble over words or whatever, and I'm like, I've ruined it for everyone. But then it's completely fine. No.
Especially funny when you get in that mode when you're like, I know I can edit this, why am I getting so crazy. But I found especially doing like the intros where it's like, hey, today on the show or whatever, oh, and I have an intro for you that I'll do at the end of the show because I think it's appropriate. But doing some self-tape stuff or whatever during this last year is one of the many things that I found sometimes absolutely impossible to do, which seems weird because we mentioned how, you know, people had this expectation of everyone's going to come back with full razzle dazzle, but like the amount of energy in the tank has been so low.
It's awful, isn't it? It's like completely depleted. And I think the one thing that I've realized and a lot of us have realized, and you know, you really do have to take time for yourself. Like, I think everyone's underestimated the sort of mental health strain that we've all gone through during this time. And like, I think everyone's expecting to sort of jump back up and be like, I'll be back in the office, fresh as a daisy, 9 a.m. but that's just not great. And I hope that everyone's had the time to sort of realize that running yourself into the ground for the sake of maintaining the buoyancy of a corporate machine is honestly not worth your energy. And you should make sure that you're happy financially as well. That's important. But just like mentally, it's the most important thing. It's been really, really difficult. Really difficult. But I think everyone sort of found their own, hopefully found their own coping mechanisms and their ways to deal with it. And it's also one of the recurring things that I've noticed, because there's the app Cameo where you can request sort of like videos and things like that. The ones that have been coming through for me most regularly are people saying, my friend's really struggling at the moment. It's not like, can you say happy birthday to Claire? It's like, my friend's really struggling at the moment. Can you like just say something to make it better? And that's like really difficult to read, but also something that I'm so grateful to this platform for, that for some reason, because of this show, like I now have the ability to sort of like hopefully sort of encourage someone to feel better. And that's like probably the best thing that I've ever experienced, is like that feeling that like I might just make someone smile when they're having a difficult time.
Yeah. You know, my friend at Christmas time got me one from someone. It was a really lovely, like, it was William Hung. I don't know if you're familiar with him from American Idol. He was one of the guys that really
Oh my God. Yes. Yeah.
And it was like the most unexpected thing. And it really just lifted my spirits like no one's business. So it's wonderful that you can do that. And I imagine that you've filmed some of those when you've been almost on empty on your tank. But then you do one of those and I'm guessing it kind of like lifts you up a little bit.
Yeah, it does. And I think I like probably have an annoying habit of being too honest with people. So like, I think a few people have ended up with a video where I have got tongue tied and just gone, I'm so sorry. I'm not going to lie to you. It's 3 a.m. I started putting makeup on at midnight. I'm so sorry. And just like carry on, because that's honestly how it's all operating at the moment.
Oh, I had a week where I was out of my medication and I just, I train wrecked a couple times and I had three shows in a row and it was just like a bloodbath at certain moments. But I just had to say, hey, listen, by the way, my apologies. Because really the thoughts just left my head. And then you have the flop sweat and then you go, oh, you know, the tumble forward, like into the glass pane.
No, I totally feel that energy. And that's like, that's the weird thing that I keep thinking about, is that at some point after nearly a year, I'm going to actually be back on a stage doing a show, which is so exciting and I can't wait for. But I have now gone from the situation where my shows were, you know, in a basement with 40 people in the audience to... I actually don't know what my first show is. Like, I don't know what my first thing's going to be. Am I going to have to be on, like, a big stage in front of, like, more people? And that's the first time that I hold a microphone again for a year. Like, it suddenly, like, it's, that's a really overwhelming thought to me. I'm sure it's really exciting for everyone else on the cast, and they're like, I can't wait, this is what we wanted to do. And I'm like, I don't want to ruin it. What if I'm terrible?
But it's even like on a smaller scale, going on a date in the world again, like the notion, right? Went through my head the other day, and I was like, oh, yeah. Like, it's what you want to do, but at the same time, it's freaky because we haven't done it for so long. And I imagine that jump in stage size, venue size would be a lot anyway, but you add this into the whole thing.
It's like, it is mad to just think about, like, even just the concept of like setting foot inside the venues that we spend all our time in, or like have previously, because yeah. I've gone for one or two socially distanced walks, which are already weird as a concept and now have become very familiar. But I always walk past the venue that I work at most on Clapham High Street, and it's just so sad. Just even looking at the empty poster frames outside where it usually says like, ball, first Friday of the month, back room with DJ Liam, like all of that kind of thing. I'm just like, there's literally nothing happening. This is a big empty room that is usually full of like joy, and on a Saturday night at around 1 a.m. absolute carnage. And now it's like just been empty for a year. It literally breaks my heart. And like the fact that like LGBTQ venues have already been struggling, right, historically, like, what's this going to do? Is everything going to open back up? I really hope that it's going to be sustainable and we don't lose more venues. Many thoughts. That was a stream of consciousness monologue.
Yeah, which I love, though. That's what I, you know, it's sort of the bedrock of the show, I think. I had a similar thing the other night. I went on a night walk. And I actually went to go get vapes because I'm trying to stay as healthy as possible. And I walked past a place where I've had many dates. It's very well located because it's a lovely restaurant. It's also not that far of a walk to my apartment. So and it was so spooky because, yes, they do have some outdoor dining, but the whole street felt dead. And while consciously I was like, well, it's good that everyone's staying in, it's good that everyone's away, it's the visceral feeling that you can't quite shake sometimes. Sometimes you can, sometimes you can't.
Yeah. And it's really, really bizarre. There's just like, it's a lot to sort of process on its own. And then it's sort of all of this, just so everyone's lives have changed in some way, whether it's for good, for bad, for whatever reason, like nothing is the same as it was when we all last felt the freedom of not like screaming with fear if someone accidentally bumped into us on the street. Like, everyone's changed in some way. And I had this really strange moment where I was stood with my friend when we'd done the walk outside the Two Brewers, and the manager lives opposite, so we were sort of just down a little alleyway trying to call him to like wave at him through a window, which is normal now apparently. Just like, we can't come inside because it's illegal, so we'll just wave at you from a distance.
I'm turning my flashlight on and off, can you see me?
Yeah, Morse code. And this like lovely girl, like teenage girl, ran around the corner and was like, I'm so sorry to bother you, like, are you from RuPaul's Drag Race? And it was just this like strange thing of like, she was so incredibly excited, and I was so incredibly excited because I have not had that experience, because we've all been inside, and I just suddenly realized like, oh my God, like people are actually watching it and it makes them happy, and like we're making people happy and that's so good.
Yeah.
While sort of outside the thing that like made me a drag performer in the first place, the building where it all started.
Exactly, yeah.
Not being able to entertain anyone inside. So it's this strange contrast of like, you are receiving the entertainment that I wish I was providing. I can't compute this. Yes, yeah. We can take a socially distanced selfie, but also please can our like queer venues open up again? I don't know how to feel. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was quite overwhelming, but me having an existential crisis because of selfie just stood there like,
all the good terrifying things and all the weird things running in parallel. It's such a strange feeling. Yeah.
Really strange.
Something you mentioned earlier made me think also of, we have this thing of, oh, yeah, we'll get to the office and be fresh as a daisy. And I think sometimes there's this guilt that we have when we're not able to overcome the last bad couple days, or you have a couple good days and you think, oh, I'm over it now, and then you're back in the shit again. So I think it's good to not beat yourself up for that, because it is just it's easier now and we can see the end, but it's still, you know, dicey at times.
Oh, for sure. And that's like the one thing that like I always say to people is like, people treat crying like it's a criminal activity. Like, I find it so bizarre. Like, it's honestly like one of my top three things to do, like, in the world.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, if I'm upset about something, like, your body's literally telling you, like, this is a thing that will make you feel better. And everyone always like fights it. And it's like, I'm fine. I can deal with it. Like, just don't. Just cry and be like, I'm actually really upset about this. Like, honestly, it's one of my favorite things, because it genuinely does make me feel better afterwards. Whereas like bottling things up, it becomes a problem.
A real problem. In a way, it's kind of like if you've drank too much, it's probably better. If you feel like you're going to puke, don't lay on the bed trying to not puke. Just go puke. You're going to feel better in minutes. It's going to be a nightmare for a couple minutes, but then.
Exactly. Also, I can't believe you'd bring up getting too drunk and needing to puke after I've just spoken about my favorite venue being closed. Such good times.
And the carnage on the dance floor, all of that. Yeah.
Exactly.
Another time that I was wondering about that seemed like it was clearly difficult to go through. I know that in the interviews you get to talk a lot about Drag Race, so I hope that this isn't dull. But I want to talk about the headspace that you were in when you, what was it? I'm trying to remember the phrase they used. Basically, they were imploring you to get to a higher standard, to bring it. And then you felt like you brought it, and then they kind of came for you again for the makeup, let's say.
Yeah.
And I have to say, I thought the ice cream outfit was very cute. I thought it was nice. You know what I mean? It was, do I see like the guest judge going, oh, I want one of those for when I go out. Thank you. Fantastic.
Pop on the cherry.
That's part of the new merch line, right? It's like a headset phone and the
yeah, it's a Bluetooth cherry, and you also get your own 90s pager with it as well.
Oh, that's fantastic. That's good. We're going to see a lot of those at the clubs when they open up again.
Absolutely. All the rage.
But it's mainly about the headspace of like pulling yourself out of that kind of like absolute sort of what I imagine to be a panic feeling.
That specific example was weird, because what actually happened in my head when Michelle was like, but the makeup, my first thought was, you could have mentioned this before, but this is the first time you're bringing this up. Right. What did you want me to do without being in possession of the information that you felt that I needed to improve that? But okay, fine.
Yeah.
It was a tough one, because I think for some people with the show, you have the complete ability to like persevere and power through anything, which I've always thought that I had. I truly believe that I'm a very resilient person and have that capability of working really hard. But when you've heard the same thing, not for weeks, for weeks, and then a 7-month break to stew and dwell on it for so long because you can't leave the house or do anything else.
Yeah.
And then you continue to hear it. And it's not just from the judges. It's also, you've been voted most basic. What are you going to do to stop being so basic? Oh, you're basic. I think you're really basic. Can't believe Estina went because you're so basic. Like, it gets to a point where I'm just like, I honestly am stood on this stage thinking about whether or not I'm going to order the chicken katsu curry and get extra edamame beans, maybe. Like, it's a lot. And it honestly was, in my opinion, nothing to do with the judges. I kind of was more fed up with being told it by my fellow contestants, where I was just like, well, we're, you know, many of us are quite close, but you've got some lights and some cameras on you, and suddenly we're repeating things that I thought we'd moved on from. But
yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can see that. There was a little bit of that kind of thing in a little heavier sense than the recent episode with Ellie. I felt kind of like you're surprised that the person you're picking on isn't favoring you. Oh, well.
Well, this is the gorgeous thing about watching it back, because I wasn't there, so I hadn't realized that as much as I felt like I had 6 episodes worth of everyone just being like, it's you, you're going. Oh, okay, this time it's you, you're going. Oh, wait, no, it's you, you're going. As soon as I was gone, it was suddenly like, sister, sister, you don't have a badge, you're going. Oh, she's gone. Ellie Diamond, what are you going to do? Like, it's just like everyone's just moving from one to the other. We could also just do what some of the contestants are doing and focus on our own selves.
Well, right.
Rather than other people.
Exactly. And I mean, it's terrible, the hate that's gone on recently. Particularly, it's people attacking Lawrence, and the hate in general with the show is a problem, because, like we said before, the show is a beacon of light in a very, very dark, troubling time. So maybe take it a little easy on the other people who are also in the same panettone that we are.
Exactly. And, like, I do understand it, because it is, when you're, like, distanced from it, i.e. you're not the person on the show.
Yeah.
It's maybe in a way like a very accessible, entertaining, lengthy sporting event.
Sure.
Probably hence the name, to be honest. But when it came to the way that people responded to Sister initially and also Lawrence, I just cannot believe it, because people are like, if I need to get annoyed about something and have words with someone about it, I am very capable of doing so. In a way that I think is appropriate and will initiate a conversation. I don't, like, Ahura doesn't need you all to attack Sister because she also dressed as a bag of chips. Like, it's so ludicrous to me that people are getting annoyed about someone who dressed with a seagull on their head as a bag of chips. People are like, no, Ahura is the original. If we really want to talk about who the original bag of chips on Drag Race UK was, then let's rewatch season one, because that's literally her name.
Yeah.
But, like, it's all in good fun at the end of the day, because if any of us had problems with each other, we would be able to have a conversation about it, or not, if that's that. That's our own choice. And I think everyone is very entitled to have their tweet their opinions about things or whatever, but to go through what Sister went through and what Lawrence is experiencing at the moment, which is literal death threats,
right,
is absolutely unbelievable. In what is honestly, as Sister said when she left, this has been the stupidest experience of my life. Like, it's, I, like, what's going on? I've, like, sellotaped a bit of material to the wall and I've got makeup on my face. There is no reason for anyone to get mad about it. Like,
right.
It's just fun. It's just silly fun.
Yeah. I know the absurdity gets lost when there's death threats.
Yeah, for sure. And that should be the magic of the show, is that it's like, I watch it back and consider how ludicrous it is that we're all taking like our lives so seriously. Like, I should have won that enamel pin badge over you, like, with high drama. Yeah. It's absolutely ludicrous.
Yeah.
But it becomes more ludicrous when you haven't been in that environment and you still feel the need to be like, Lawrence can't believe that you were so mean to this person that you've known for half a decade and we met like 2 months ago. I don't know. I feel like they could have the conversation about it.
And also, it's the kind of thing where it's a pressure cooker environment, so the worst sides of people do come out. So people should take that into consideration. I think the main lesson, too, is that say all the shit you want in a group chat with your friends. Do you know what I mean? Because we've all said horrible things watching the show about people on the show because you get bitchy or whatever. But that's not really, that's not really suitable for public consumption.
No, and the thing that, the worst thing for me, and it's such a minor thing, but it's like, I think people think because you were on a TV show that, like, you literally don't see your notifications on social media. Like, something changes magically because there's a blue tick on Instagram. It's a different app. Like, someone's running the account for you.
Yeah, you're right.
No, every time someone posts, like, an Instagram story where they get someone to vote and to toot or boot the looks every week, I'm like, you please, like, this is the fifth week in the row that I've got a notification from about 17 different accounts from like Brazil to Chicago to wherever, telling me that my outfit is ugly. Like, I know, I saw it. The judges told me. I also don't need to know that 93% of you agree. Like,
By the way, I haven't mentioned it yet, so my apologies, but congratulations on Outside In. And I wanted to comment on how glamorous and lovely you look in the video and the promo material.
Thank you. That's hilariously, people commented when I put the promo, the image of the actual cover out, being like, but this is what Rue wanted all along. And I was like, yeah, this promo photo that was photographed to me 2 years ago, because we're in a pandemic and I haven't been able to have a photo shoot. Like, all that basically happened coming onto the show is the way that my drag operates in the environments that I'm in. We don't have like the pageants of the US or this like concept of all of these things. So unless you're very much in that fashion realm, you will gladly go on stage in something that fits and is sparkly, because your job is there to entertain the audience. Like, yeah. I've had shows where I've gone on without lashes, done my makeup in 20 minutes. It's dark because we've only got two lights on the stage pointing like inwards, and like no one can really see what's happening anyway. So like, it's a completely different world. So I was just like, this is what I think is supposed to happen, so I'm going to try and do it in the way that I think is meant to happen. Turns out, what I should have been doing was wearing what I wanted to wear the whole time.
Oh, sure.
Other than sort of playing up to my own expectations of what the show is supposed to be. Because I got it into my head watching the first season that I was like, okay, well, it was pretty campy. Like, Bagger wore an umbrella upside down on her head with a rubber duck in it. So, right. Like, I'm going to play up to the UK drag is camp aspect of things. And then they cast an entire fashion season and I was wrong. So it was just a bad judgment call on my part. But now I get to do the music video for Outside In and stuff, and like wear the kind of thing that I would have done anyway, and sort of present myself in the pop princess way that I kind of always wanted to.
Yeah. Now, what was it like working with Little Boots?
The gag, the absolute gaggery of it all. Little Boots and Tom Aspel, sort of like the fact that they're both writers on this song is absolutely incredible. Like, Tom Aspel is a sort of iconic British queer singer-songwriter in his own right, who I thought maybe one day I'd have the opportunity to meet drunk on a night out and say, oh my God, I love your album and good to meet you, bye. And then Little Boots' music, I literally perform in my set. Like, oh, wow. Her songs are in my set list.
Yeah.
So this was just a clash of worlds that in so many ways makes total sense, and in many other ways I'm just screaming internally being like, I'm asleep. This isn't happening. Like, I'm literally asleep right now.
Is there an album coming out at any point, or will it be a series of singles?
There's definitely more music coming, talking in abstract terms.
Sure.
I'm definitely working on a lot more things, but we'll see how it is presented. I think that's still a decision-making process.
Yeah, and also there's so many more ways to present stuff now.
Yeah, I mean, particularly with the drag aspects of things and the things that I'm passionate about, not only am I so passionate about pop music as like legitimate pop music, see me being obsessed with like Eurovision and girl bands my entire life for details, but drag is so visual. So it's the videos and all of that sort of thing that I want to think about, like the right way to package and present everything to everyone, because this like moment that I feel that we've captured, where we've, as we've said many times, we've been able to bring a bit of joy into everyone's households every week. I just want to keep doing that through music, through visual things, through very, very silly tweets as well.
Well, and also UK hun definitely brightened a lot of people's days over and over, because it also gets stuck in your head and you can't escape it.
Yeah, the United King Dolls version, I think at this point has been played 500,000 more times on Spotify than my team's version, which obviously I am like incredibly happy for them that they did so well in terms of that challenge, but also just a tiny bit sad that Arwen didn't Yeah. But it's such a catchy song, and it was great that like all of us got to be part of that.
Well, and as a Eurovision obsessive, you must have been excited.
Oh, yeah, excited. And then it really stung when I was like, you're in the bottom two. Oh. Girl group, Eurovision, literally my favourite things on this planet. And you've done me dirty like this in front of Graham Norton as well. How dare you? Yeah, no, it was really exciting to be part of that. And also, whether or not the history books remember Filth Harmony or Bananarama, moving forward in time, who's to say? But I'm glad the Frog Destroyers and United King Dolls have been able to do something really different and sort of push drag out into more people's lives. I'm sure there's many people who haven't seen Drag Race who have definitely heard Bing Bang Bong.
Oh yeah, I imagine so. Yeah.
Mm.
So what's the rest of your day look like?
What does the rest of my day look like? It looks like definitely another cup of coffee because I've like run out now and I'm like, keep going, you can do it. I believe in you. So I need to like caffeinate up. I have a few little bits and pieces that I need to get on with, including maybe a little bit of writing.
Oh, that sounds nice.
If I can sort of fit that in. Also rhinestoning a bodysuit. That's an important thing that will be happening during multiple phone calls. I love how I feel like you asked this question and I was meant to say something like really exciting.
No,
I'm genuinely just talking you through my day now.
No, that's what I wanted to hear. I was curious about what the rest of your day would be like. Yeah.
Yeah. Like just lots of like bits and pieces. It's odd at the moment, isn't it? Because I feel like we all have like tasks that we want to complete. Like I knew that we were going to sit down for this period of time and have a lovely chat. So this is like a moment in the day. And then everything else that happens is sort of like ethereally floating in the ether for me to just sort of grab at randomly.
That's how I feel too. I'm like outside of this, it's like kind of catch as catch can. Like maybe I'll be editing something probably or doing this or that. But it's like, yeah, I find that that's really common lately too. Instead of having a couple big things during the day, it's like there's one main thing. And then everything else sort of floats around it.
Mm. And I think that's nice in a way. Like, it's almost nice that you extend things out over a period of time. So, like, in my mind, not that weekends necessarily ever existed for me as a drag performer, but, like weekends, I feel like people who are working office jobs are sort of like, do you know what? I'll just send that email tomorrow. I know it's the weekend, but what does that even mean anymore? Like, it's quite nice. Is it like somewhere like Sweden or somewhere where they actually just do like, they do 6-day working weeks, but it's like 10 till 4.
I think it is.
Like everything's shorter.
Yeah, it's much shorter, the workday, which makes sense. Because like the 9 to 5 plus, if some people have hour commutes, then you're thinking like, how is that supposed to work really?
No, absolutely. I kind of don't miss working in a normal job.
What was your last normal job?
My last normal job, interestingly, was working in television behind the scenes.
Oh, what did you do?
Writing
or?
No, very boring admin. Not very boring admin, because that's really mean to people who do those jobs now. And actually, they're all iconic and it's really difficult. It's like a lot of logistics and typing out risk assessments and call sheets and making sure that there's money in an envelope for them to take with them or in an account or balancing up and putting receipts into Excel spreadsheets and things like that. So I was basically doing admin, but it just happened to be for something that seems really exciting. Turns out drag is definitely more exciting.
But have you found that that experience has helped you with managing the let's say the less glamorous aspects of your career?
Yeah, to an extent. It definitely made me like more on edge when we were filming, because I had more of an awareness of what was going on anytime I heard like a radio or like someone. Like I would just like, we'd be having a conversation and I'd just see like someone turn to talk to someone and I was like,
what? Like, something's going on.
They're about to it.
They're about to do something to us. What is it?
But yeah, I think that would be one aspect of things that if I could go back and do it again, I'd just like fully brush that off, because I think for me confessionals were like my free time to like sit there and be like, I'm just having a chat, like very, very theirs.
Yeah, very
like having a chat.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And that felt very freeing. Whereas like all the conversations, I was like, there's too many people in the workroom. You just talk to each other. I'm going to sit quietly.
Well, you definitely shone during the confessionals. I mean, everyone fell in love with you pretty quickly on the show as well.
Thank you. That's really nice.
Well, it's true. And so there is justice for Tia. And that's the...
Yeah, to an extent. I think it's just, it's still really strange for me because I'm just really socially awkward. So when people say nice things about my confessionals, I'm like, oh, that's a nice thing to say. Thank you.
Thank you for that nice thing that you said. Yeah.
I find it very difficult to own the idea. I'd like a brief... Someone just knocked on my door. Yeah, the whole concept of being... I don't know. Maybe I'll just start calling myself a confessionals assassin, since they wouldn't give me the lip sync assassin title, which, to be honest, I didn't really... I just asked that question because I was like, we'll have a conversation. Why not? What a lovely reaction they all gave it. But I've been calling myself the lip sync meh assassin.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Just like... Yeah, she did. It's no Gigi Good doing a backflip, but I did a forwards roll dressed as an ice cream. That's camp. Like,
that qualifies, right? Is it? Yeah. Not everyone has to do the backflip as long as you have the camp outfit. But we said socially awkward. So did it's always interesting because so often performers are. How would you characterize you going into a club if you were not either working it or as the doll?
How many drinks have we had at this point? That makes a big difference.
Okay, sure. Yeah. Well, let's say three. And what's your favorite drink?
Oh, gin and tonic. Absolutely. I think it depends because it's sort of a weird thing now that I'd never used to have, which is like working in drag means that whenever I go to my favorite places, they are also places that I work. So if I'm like out with friends, I still get to be like, oh, Agatha's here managing this room today and Reese is behind the bar. Hi, guys. Like, having like a nice moment. So it's completely different. But I think I've always been socially awkward in like the reverse way that it's expected. And like, weirdly, we mentioned Big Brother earlier, but this has just reminded me, when I started at secondary school, high school, I, on the first week, in fact, just went around asking anyone. No, like, not even thinking, like, you stick to different year groups or, like, these people are a lot older than you and might not be interested in what a 10-year-old, 11-year-old has to say to them. I went around because it was the final that week and I did, like, a tally asking everyone who they thought was going to win. Because I was just like, there are so many people here. I'll be able to like work it out before it happens. Because basically like this is good maths because I can ask like 100 people.
Yeah.
And then I'm going to predict it before it happens because I'm also a geek. And so I thought it was a great idea. And then that just like made me like uncomfortably known to like every single year group as the one who went around just asking like people you'd never spoken to in your life who was going to win Big Brother. Because I just thought that was normal to be very friendly and chatty with anyone.
And it's also your enthusiasm. And so you really want to share your enthusiasm or see it reflected with others. And then my guess is that once that sort of had a backfire, then it makes you go, oh, I'll stay away from that whole set of operations. Like, I'm not going to go up to people as much. It kind of makes you go within yourself a bit.
Yeah, to an extent, but also I think I like rebel against it a little bit, which also probably passed through onto the show when, in the face of being called like basic constantly, all that made me do is think, well, I get to have a nice time in the confessionals when I'm like just having this one-on-one. So I can look forward to that bit. Yeah. I know that this is going to happen to me constantly in this. So maybe I won't look forward to like, it's a new day in the workroom, walking in for another morning, being told that I am predictably going to wear a horrible outfit or something. But I get to look forward to this. Like, I just tend to like realign my gaze a little bit and be like, this bit's fun. Veronica's nice to me. And doing drag is exciting. And also, I'm literally walking on the main stage of RuPaul's Drag Race, a thing that we never thought was going to happen because we didn't have the show in this country
right.
when we all started doing drag. So
yeah.
it's kind of impossible to focus on the negative when you're sort of just looking around like Charlie and the Chocolate Factory being like, wow.
Well, that's good. So then you maintained a similar kind of approach in school then?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. Like, you sort of, I think people find their flow and their vibe and their niche. And I was, my friends tended to skirt, you know how you always have like the popular sporty ones?
Yeah.
And like for a few years, I was accidentally like nearly that just because I happened to be quite reasonable for some reason at like hockey. And I was tall, so I could jump out, like do the high jump pretty well. Like,
yeah.
I just bizarrely was like adequate at a few sports. So the PE teachers did not come for me as hard as they did later. So that was weird. And then like my friendship group, I was just like, actually, no, I want to do the school plays because that's what I've been doing anyway. So like, you guys are mean. I'm not dealing with this.
Yeah.
It kind of always in my mind felt like it was my own choice that I was like, no, you're not very nice. Actually, you're unkind. So luckily I have these friends because as well as being on the hockey team, I'm also in the drama club and school choir and the orchestra debate. Like, I was very that kind of, I'm doing everything.
An all-rounder from an early age. What did you play in orchestra?
So I got asked to be in the orchestra eventually because of general musical ability. So I didn't actually play anything. They just didn't have anyone who could do percussion. So like me and two of my friends who could like read music and had rhythm, but we were actually just chosen because we were good in the choir, just had to turn up and be like, just hit things
yeah.
when the music told us to. So I did not play like the xylophone or like the cymbal or like any of the rest of the random things.
Triangle? Did you have a triangle run at any point?
Actually, my friend Harry genuinely only did the triangle in the orchestra and just had to go ding, ling, 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 ling in one song and would just sit for the other like three songs that we were performing. So that was just like, that orchestra moment was just an emergency backup plan because the music teacher was like, I have no one.
Yeah.
Please just you do it.
I never learned really to read music, except I could figure out where I was, where I had to do the percussion bit. So I played percussion in the school orchestra for a bit because I played drums. I play other instruments,
oh, wow.
but I still have never been really that great with sheet music, but I'm good at sort of knowing when the thing is supposed to happen. So that worked out well.
You can sort of like figure it out for like with the instruments if you know what your chords are or anything like that. Like you can create your own thing. So I
yeah,
feel
exactly.
like the reading of music is sort of pointless, but like irrelevant to what you want to create yourself.
Yeah, exactly. And you can get around it, particularly if it's percussion, I guess. Not that it's easier, but if that's your thing, yeah.
I was really bad at it, to be honest. I'd just like hit stuff too hard and he'd be like, softer. And I'm like, I'm doing this as a favor to you. Like, yeah. I'm not emotionally invested in the situation.
Do you play other instruments?
I've always tried to, and I would never say that I can, but I did like learn piano and guitar for a bit. And now I can sort like very, very poorly. Actually, do you know what? I'm not even going to declare guitar as an option. Like, I can... We've got about four chords that over the space of 5 minutes, I'd probably be able to, like, just about get my fingers in the right place for them. But it's the nails. They really get in the way of pressing down the strings.
Yeah, so sometimes glamour just gets in the way.
Stress.
What can you do about it? Yeah.
Absolutely. Although at school, I did have to play the bass in our... we had like a weekly chapel service because it was a Church of England like school, which it probably doesn't happen as much for you, but in the UK, like religious schools are still there, but they're just schools. Like no one thinks of it in that way. So we had like a weekly chapel service and I did have to play the bass guitar while my friend Chantel and other people in a band, she sang, sort of just like a Christian hymn in front of like our year group. And that was just a thing that we did because our head of RE was also a reverend who led chapel services, which is really, I think that's actually quite normal here, that a lot of schools, particularly like outside of like big cities, you'll find that like the school up the road was Trinity Catholic School. And then like the school, like, I've never really thought about that until I'm like talking to you about it. And I'm like, it is weird, isn't it?
Well,
like,
it's definitely very UK specific, I think, at least to an American.
Yeah. We do have like, to be honest, most schools are probably like completely non-denominational or whatever, but like you'll find like in those sort of suburban-y, like maybe more villagey areas, everything's like a Church of England or Catholic or something.
Sure. Yeah. Well, I know that we had 90 minutes scheduled and we're just hitting that now. So would you like to do another one sometime?
Oh my God, this has actually been so much fun. I just feel like we're having, I honestly forgot that we were recording things. I was just having a really lovely chat.
Oh no, that's lovely. I just didn't want to, impose on your time and everything. Do you know what I mean?
No, it's five, isn't it?
Yeah.
I do have another thing that I have to do in like half an hour.
Tia, I know you have to go, but I want to tell you how lovely of a chat this has been and how much fun I've had. And thank you for starting my day right.
Oh, well, thank you for taking me into the evening correctly with different different time zones.
I'm glad we could help each other with that. For more stuff and plenty of things, head on over to patreon.com/Craig and Friends.